بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، الصلاة والسلام على خاتم النبيين وإمام المرسلين. Okay, so we gave I think two sessions. It's more than enough for the ayah, which is very one of the dark eyes of the Quran. There will be always in any revelation some aspects or something which refer to some dark history, especially because it's magic and witchcraft by themselves are dark. And the word sahar is coming from sihr, coming from sahar. Sahar is the time after dawn break. So it's neither night nor day. It's a twilight zone. It's very best answer. Like this series and what television, twilight zone. Twilight zone, twilight affairs are all always dark and not clear and very, very challenging to understand. And it came in the contest. Let's go back quickly, just for a few minutes. It came in the contest, the ayah before the verse, وَلَمَّا جَاءَ رَسُولٌ مِنْ عِنْدِ اللَّهِ Check, open the translation. Before that, ayah number 100, here in my count, maybe 101 in uses. وَلَمَّا جَاءَ رَسُولٌ مِنْ عِنْدِ اللَّهِ مُصَدِّقٌ لِمَا مَعْهُمْ لَبَذَ فَرِيقٌ مِنَ الَّذِينَ أُوتُوا الْكِتَابَ كِتَابَ اللَّهِ وَرَاءَ ظُهُورِهِمْ كَأَنَّهُمْ لَا يَعْلَمُونَ. And when a messenger, when a messenger came, confirming what they have,
and to apostle from God, confirming the truth already in their possession, some of those who were granted revelation aforetime cast a divine writ behind their backs as though unaware of what it says.
Yeah, and then instead what they followed, they argued then, okay, they took what's the story of Sulaiman as an argument, saying, Sulaiman, and this group who cast the book of Allah behind them split in two factions. One faction said, Sulaiman, was a kafir and was committing shirk and witchcraft. And Muhammad is definitely a liar because he claims Sulaiman is a prophet and not a kafir. So we don't need to bother about Muhammad. He has proven to be a liar. That's one faction. Another faction said, no, Sulaiman was a prophet and he was controlling jinn and so on by using wizardry and magic and witchcraft, etc. And since he is a prophet, as Muhammad is confirming that, it's perfectly fine to use witchcraft. We don't need that much to be bothered about revelation. Witchcraft and magic will get us a long way ahead. We don't need that new revelation. So either they are using it like a saw, cutting forward or cutting backward. If Sulaiman is a kafir, then Muhammad is confirming that he's not confirming that, then he's also an imposter. Or if he is a believer, then what's the fuss following Muhammad? Because if we follow that what we have inherited our Sulaiman of witchcraft and things like that, that will be perfect. So the ayah after that, which we discussed in almost three sessions, three sessions, is that instead what they follow, instead of casting, they cast the book of Allah behind them, but what they follow, read the translation just plain as it stands. And they followed instead.
And follow instead that which the evil ones used to practice during Solomon's reign. For it was not Solomon who denied the truth, but those evil ones who denied it by teaching people sorcery. And they follow that which has come down through the two angels in Babylon, Harut and Marut, although these two never taught it to anyone without first declaring, we are but a temptation to evil. Do not then deny God's truth. And they learn from these two how to create discord between a man and his wife, but whereas they harm none thereby save by God's leave, they acquire knowledge that only harms themselves and does not benefit them. Although they know indeed that he who acquires this knowledge shall have no share in the good of life of the life to come, for vile indeed is that art for which they have sold their own souls had they but known it.
And all the translation can be objected just in the simple way, can be objected because it says, they evil ones are practicing at the time. Actually, tatlu meaning reporting or reading at the time. So it's not a referring to practice. That's even the similar meaning of the word. So this is the translation. That is not very. Who is the translator? Is that Muhammad Asad?
That one is Muhammad Asad.
Yeah, I don't think he was lucky with this one. First one. Second, the one he followed the general acceptance that it has been revealed to Harut and Marut, and they are two angels. But we discussed there are various options, which are also weighty meaning. One of it is the reading of, by the way, someone asked it that it's not one of the seven readings, but the reading of Ibn Abbas and Mujahid, and I think of Ibn Mas'ud. That's instead of two angels, two kings, Malikain, with the Kasra. So that's the reading. It's maybe not the seven, but a well known and reported reading. So obviously, he followed the more common one. That's fine, no problem. And then even though the more common, as we talk of the angels, they may be in the sentence shifting backward and forward. That's all related to the nature of magic and relation of the two angels, which would say an issue of ancient history, which is obviously buried under dust and sand. Maybe one day something will be dug out, which will enter the earth, or maybe something will never be dug, with a little relevance, actually. The main purpose of the ayah is, first of all, to deny that Suleiman was a kafir. That's qat'i, definite. But the shayateen, the evil ones, are the kafir. And the word shayateen applies both for humans and jinn. That's number one. Secondly, it may, if the other readings are accepted with shifting some of sentences forward and backward, or we say that sometimes it's implicated by linguistic and other things, is we can find really good reference, historical reference, which proves that the Jews were attributing the witchcraft being revealed to Jibril and Mikhail, Gabriel and Mikhail, then the other restructuring, which we shifted it and said, but it was not revealed. And said it's a mausul, it's a negation. It was not revealed to the angels, meaning Jibril and Mikhail. And then we have to shift the sentence, as we discussed last time. So exonerating the angels from that. Another aspect, which is, you know, it has been revealed to two other angels, which are named Harut and Marut. Allah knows where they are and what their location now. And they were, for some reason or another, instructed or punished by forced to teach magic, but with the condition that they will warn everyone if he actually not just learning magic, but if he applies it, he will become a kafir. So in the end of the transition, Muhammad Asad, it seems to be just a mere learning. But this is even objective. Although Tabari followed the same line like Muhammad Asad, also he said that it has been revealed to two angels, they will be tested or punished by this teaching. Still, Tabari said the mere teaching itself and the mere learning is not kufr. The kufr is the application. That's splitting between husband and wife. You have the real application of it, because the application cannot be achieved or the result cannot be achieved except by committing some kind of kufr or shirk, possibly, like sacrificing to the devil or something like that, or these obscure dark things, or disrespecting the book of Allah, or insulting Allah, or something like that, which all of them manifestly acts of kufr. Nevertheless, whatever the details there are, as I said, it's by its own nature and dark area, the maximum they can achieve really, because mentioning split husband and wife could not be possibly mentioning the minimum they can achieve. That is the maximum they can achieve. Then that they cannot harm anyone except Allah. Not that the witchcraft, meaning that they can override Allah's action, or like the pagans for example, in the Hindu culture, plenty of like certain Brahmins with certain exercise and can override the action of Shiva and Vishnu. Accept or practice witchcraft, at least not learning, because you cannot say the word alim wala man ishtara, who bought it. What is bought it? Not the knowledge, but rather maybe the action itself. He has no share in akhira. Committing a kufr, he has no share in paradise. Miserable deal. Do too much in that, because it will not clarify anything. It was just to stress these things. In Babylon, then they have been ordered to that either for as a punishment or a testing. But definitely as a testing, but maybe as also a punishment for them. For what, we don't know. All these stories about being enticed by a woman and so on, all these are obviously myths and stories which people love to develop, and it mushrooms and become bigger and bigger and bigger with time. And then it continues. We stop there and we continue. وَلَوْ أَنَّهُمْ the next ayah, وَلَوْ أَنَّهُمْ آمَنُوا وَاتَّقُوا لَمَثُوبَةٌ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ لَخَيْرٌ Allah khairu law kanu ya'lamun. That's a straightforward. Read just the translation.
1 second. And had they but believed and been conscious of him, reward from God would indeed have brought them good had they but known it. the other translation. If they had believed and been God conscious, God would have granted and rewarded them well if they only knew it.
Yeah, absolutely. So if they have real knowledge, the reality of the universe and the meaning of the universe and the statistics of the universe, they would have recognized that embracing faith, especially embracing the faith in the final prophet who brought to them the evidences, the irrefutable evidence, especially for the Jews at that time, the evidences of Rasul was irrefutable because he could report things from their history which nobody else knew, some of it in hidden books. And secondly, it's well known and well established, everyone knew the Quraysh, everyone. No, nobody has any doubt that a literate man, he has never any scholarship. And this part, these detailed knowledge in various areas are simply impossible without considerable level of scholarship, which he definitely did not have, completely did not have. It shows us the story of Adas, when the Prophet was in Taif and he was stoned and so on. And then on the way back, he took refuge into an orchard. And then that orchard belonged to some Quraysh. When you saw him in this situation, tribalism overcame the feeling that still he's their cousin and being mishandled by the Quraysh. But because they are disbeliever, they sent their servant slave Adas to him with a bunch of grapes. Five grapes are the best in the world anyway, until now. And then when he offered the grapes to Allah, he said, Bismillah. And the man said, what do you know what Allah? How do you say Bismillah? Nobody in this country knows what's Allah who say Bismillah. And the advisor said, okay, well, where are you from? Because obviously he's not from this country. He's a foreigner. He's a slave by stolen or warfare or something, legitimate or illegitimate. At the time, slavery was ongoing in both ways. I said, I'm from Nainawa, nearby Mosul, near Mosul. Now it's part of Mosul in Iraq. Say, from the city of the pious man, Yunus ibn Matta. Say, how do you know about Yunus ibn Matta? Who knows in this country about Yunus ibn Matta? The majority of Jews themselves don't know Yunus ibn Matta because he's actually outside Israel and so on. They never heard about him. How do you know about Yunus ibn Matta? Say, he's my brother, he's a prophet, and I'm a prophet. And others recognize immediately this is a prophet. This knowledge can be known by the prophet, and he turned kissing his hand and feet. And then obviously his master tried to discourage him. Oh, stick to your religion. This man is fooling everybody. He's a liar or something like that. For the Jews, it was more because he was able to dig deeper in things which they were hiding or secluding. Even the common people were unaware about. So if they had rather believed in this final messenger and be Allah conscious, taqwa. Taqwa is Allah conscious. Aware about Allah and protect himself from evil, world evil, by being conscious of Allah Ta'ala. It would have been, the reward from Allah Ta'ala would have been much better, obviously. There's no comparison, but it would have been much better for them if they only knew the consequences of their action, really real knowledge which produces action, produces concepts in the mind, that they were not. And then another, next, that's the ayah. Then another issue, then continue with the Jews again. أول شيء نكسر لا تزيد عليه فاسق أيها الذين آمنوا لا تقولوا راعنا وقولوا ظلمنا واسمعوا قل الكافرين عذاب أليم. Read that first.
O you who have attained to faith, do not say to the prophet, listen to us, but rather say, have patience with us and hearken unto him, since grievous suffering awaits those who deny the truth. The other translation. Believers, do not say listen to us, but rather say, have patience and listen to us. Those who reject the truth, they will have painful punishment.
I think they struggled because they did not know how to say ra'ina. And they still the Bedouins in the north of Arabia said, they say ra'ina. Ra'ina may be caretaker, listen to me. But instead of saying listen, it's not really verbally translated listen. It is, it comes from the word osra'iyya, ra'i, shabad. Shabad is the ra'i. So attend to us, care to us. Instead of saying someone, listen to me directly, which is not a bad word after you say. If you say, take care of me, meaning instead of saying, listen to me like a command, take care of me, yeah, meaning listen to me, turn your face to me and listen to me. And but the problem with that is that in Hebrew, and also in Arabic, the Jews could twist their tongue a little bit instead of just said ra'ina, maybe say ar'ana or ra'ana, meaning you ar'an, you stupid man. You reckless man. Al-Ar'an is the reckless. Say this driver is Ar'an, he's reckless. You reckless man. So they twist their tongues and instead of the proper meaning, care for us, listen to us, it means we address you, you reckless man. So they were twisting the word, try to destroy it and use some play of words which has a negative connotation. So the believer were ordered to, instead of to avoid the word which originally is innocent and nice, no problem with it, and to say instead of one, look at us, from seeing, not from delaying. So the translator seems to be asking this. Then the original meaning is that look at us, not that there's a listen to us, substituting listen have patience with us, delay us. Or, no, it is actually, instead of saying listen to us, say look at us. Because the word listen could be twisted to be an insult to the one who's been addressed. And the twist was done by the Jews, especially their language is very close to Arabic, Semitic language, and that twist having a very negative meaning in essentially say, oh, you, the reckless one, instead of take care of us, like Arabic. So that's it. And this is obviously, it has also general connotation that the way to address the Messenger of Allah is with respect. And with wording and phrases which could not have a negative meaning in any sense, or which could not be twisted as much. In that case, that historic situation, it was this specific word and was subject to this anzurna. So don't say to the Prophet, ra'ina, but anzurna, look at us. The original word is not bad at all, but that twist, that Jewish twisting made it unusable. And then I said, and listen to the command of Allah Ta'ala and beware that the disbeliever will have a severe punishment. Why? Because addressing the Prophet with this intention to call him reckless or to insult him is definitely an act of kufr. There's no excuse for that. Any insult to the Prophet or to Allah is an act of kufr. Not so for other beings. Other beings is a sin. Could be a grave sin, but it's not a kufr. So that's the meaning. So the Jews were desperate. They were using all kinds of techniques and technology of twisting words to do an insult which you cannot nail them down. Why you are using this? No, we are meaning, look at us, take care of us. We don't mean anything wrong, no, because the word can be twisted. Yeah? So that's essentially the So the translator has struggled with it, although they did a nice substitute, but it doesn't give really the historic background. So they substitute, listen to us, they say, have patience with us. It doesn't reflect really what has happened and what's really why such a minor issue would be an injunction of the Quran. And now it's actually more grave. It is the original word they use it specifically, ra'ina, which can be mutilated into aran, into reckless, you reckless one, which is definitely an insult and show disrespect. And disrespect to the messenger and to Allah and his messenger is an act of kufr. So all you believe, don't do that. Substitute another word which nobody can twist, because the word anzurna, whatever twisted around, it will not produce any insult. It may become unintelligible, but it doesn't produce any insult. And listen to Allah's commands. This is a serious issue, it's not a secondary issue. And remember that for the disbelievers, for the kafirin, they are grievous, they are painful punishment. Then it continues, مَا يَوَدُّ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا مِنْ الْكِتَابِ وَلَا الْمُشْرِكِينَ أَنْ نَزَّلَ عَلَيْكُمْ مِنْ خَيْرٍ مِنْ رَبِّكُمْ وَاللَّهُ يَخْتَصُّ بِرَحْمَتِهِ مَنْ يَشَاءُ وَاللَّهُ ذُو الْفَضْلِ الْعَظِيمِ. Then explaining a fact about which is the state of the heart of these people, which nobody knows externally, because externally they may appear friendly, they may be welcoming, that's one. But deep in their heart, what is their motivation? I read the translation. I think the translation is straightforward.
Neither those from among the followers of earlier revelation who are bent on denying the truth, nor those who ascribe divinity to others besides God, would like to see any good ever bestowed upon you from on high by your sustainer. God singles out for his grace, whom he wills, for God is limitless in his great bounty.
Yeah, so that's the reason for this, all this insult and all this misbehavior is that they have wished that nothing good should come to you from your Lord, as if they are the guardian of Allah's treasures. No, Allah can bring his mercy to any. But they said, how come Allah's mercy come to these Gentiles, to these lowly people? Allah distributes his mercy wherever he wishes. And these disbelievers, they are really jealous, even envious. They don't want any good company from your Lord. So this is not done by, it's not that they sometimes they claim, we want actually to educate you and warn you from this imposter and so on. That's not really the real motivation in the bottom of their heart, because they know, they received the prophet, which will essentially get our revelation and our history essentially abrogated and becoming irrelevant, meaning our history has terminated now. Now a new history, a new nation, a new development is coming, and they are unwilling to give up that what they have, just out of pure jealousy or envy. And this hint why the next ayah comes after that. So that's what the real motivation for all these antics, or these misusing the word ra'ina for these argument about Sulaim being a kafir or not a kafir, all of that is not really with a good intention to teach you the real history or to teach you real facts or the intention is that they recognize deep inside this is a new revelation. It has come outside Bani Israel, outside our own nation and our own culture and history, which is a proud history, a good part of it, at least going for, at the time the prophet was going for 2,000 years, because Musa is about 1450 before Christ. Well, I know 1450, most, the best point of view is 1450, and the prophet is 600. So 2,000 years is considerable history. A good part of it was glorious and miserable. The other part is miserable, but it's still a history which cannot be just ignored. Now all of that will be gone, become irrelevant, become just history. Cannot continue in the future. It's a new history, new nation, new developments coming. So this is just simply for people who are jealous and envious and unwilling to move forward. They want to stuck in the past. It's just simply not acceptable. So all these antics is not because they want for you any good for you, or educate you, or inform you, or develop you further. No. Evidence for that is that they were living with you for centuries, but they never propagated Judaism. Some Arabs converted Judaism. Some Arabs went to them and put their children for them to be educated and become literate. But that's the action from the side of the Arab themselves, going out, trying to get people involved. No. The only Judaization which has happened at a significant time was the time of Sulaiman and the Queen of Saba. After that, they were secluded themselves. They were never carried a da'wah intensively in any significant way. So now suddenly they became caring about you, want you good. No, it's not. It's not. It is just jealousy and evil feelings and intention. And the next ayah hints that to that, related to it, but it fits it in that context. All this seems to be far away from it, but I will try to connect it. Right? So what the next ayah says?
Any message which we annul or consign to oblivion, we replace with a better or a similar one. Doth thou not know that God has the power to will anything? And it's another one. Any verse from the previous books we cause to be abrogated or forgotten, we'll replace it with one like it or better. Do you not know that God has power over all things? Quite similar translations there.
So the translation, they're also struggling again. The Quran says, "Man ansakh min ayatin aw sir," whatever ayah we abrogate or cause it to be forgotten or even forsaken, because nisyan, forgetfulness in Islam, could mean falling oblivion, getting out of memory. That's the normal standard you are using. But also nisyan meaning ignore and let fall in oblivion deliberately, just forsake it. Now they try to translate that as if it is the ayahs related to previous revelation. That's not true. It's every ayah, including the ayahs of the Quran. Any ayah. Allah has the power in any ayah which has been revealed in previous revelations or in current revelation. He has the power, or at your consideration, reason he she said, is to abrogate, remove it completely, or cause it to be forgotten. But in that case, it will be substituted, it will not be a loss, because in that case, it will be substituted with another ayah or another verse, which is better, or at least equal. And then the question is, don't you know that Allah is capable of have the power to perform anything he wills? Yeah, that's correct. So I think the translation is a bit restrictive and trying to ascribe to a school which claims there's no abrogation in the Quran or something like that. But this is not historical reports, which are not one or two or three, five. It's multiple corroborating and irrefutable reports that some eyes of the Quran has been has been revealed and abrogated for specific purpose, and then the Quran substituted better ayahs. Let me give you an example here for this. Obviously, previous ayahs of the previous revelation has been in whole essentially abrogated and substituted by better formulated and more precisely and more comprehensively ayahs solving that problem which was addressed by the AI in ancient books with a better solution. No doubt about that. But even in the Quran, couple of main issues that abrogation of Quran happened. First, one of it is that someone was once reciting reading the Quran and he skipped over an ayah. And then after Salah, he turns to Ubay ibn Ka'b. Ibn Ka'b is the, as we mentioned, yearly is the master reader of the Quran, the most dominant and specialized one, because he was literate and he knew how to write in Hebrew and in Arabic and Aramaic and so on. So he said, is why here? Said, why yes? Say, and said, didn't you notice that I skipped one ayah? Say, yes, I noticed that you jumped that ayah, but I thought it's abrogated. Or as I said, you as a following the Imam, in the case of the Prophet, you have to do fatih. That's the purpose of this incident by Allah's design, is that you have an instruction how to deal with imams in the future, which obviously are not receiving revelation, and reading the Quran in its fixed form until Yawm al-Qiyamah. You have to do fatih. You have to remind the imam of the ayah he missed. Go back and remind him. Read the ayah which he had missed. Stop him and read it. Yeah, and you know, you have seen that in the masajid, how it happens, often especially in Taraweeh, how people remind the imam sometimes. You should do that to me also, like any imam. If the ayah, if I don't read it, then you know it is abrogated. Yeah? So that's in the case of Prophet Islam. If he skipped one ayah, he skipped that by Allah's design. He made to forget and skip it deliberately by Allah, so he can make the necessary injunction. So you tell him, no, this is not correct action. Correct action, if the imam skips an ayah, whoever the imam is, even the Prophet himself, make fatwa on him. If you are certain that there's an ayah have been missed or substituted, because sometimes there are places in the Quran who look similar, so the imam's mind jumps to another ayah, another surah. Then you have to remind him, get him back to that one. Then he recognizes the mistake and go to in the Proverbs 3. Or in the case of the Prophet, you have also. Even if he's a prophet, you still have to do this duty. But obviously, this first instant was to give this instruction and make the system clear until Yawm al-Qiyamah. And then Rasul concluded, in my case, if I don't read the ayah, insist to continue without the ayah, then you know the ayah has been abrogated. That's number one. So that's an evidence that there have been abrogation, and it was known to the Sahaba without any doubt, but they didn't know how to deal if the Prophet jumped one in the Salah, and they got this instruction. Secondly, Ubay ibn Ka'b is reporting in various reports, asking people, do you know how big Surah Al-Ahzab was? Well, Al-Ahzab like in middle Medina time, like about the fifth year. So that most injunctions are ruling were just in transitional state, going from the approved regulation of before Islam and then shifting to the final regulation. But sometimes they needed an intermediate regulation for some time. And it had various injunctions. I said, no, they said, how big it is? It's 40. I know it is. No, it was even bigger than Al-Baqarah, but plenty of it was abrogated with time. And it slipped down to that because it was like temporary injunctions and rulings. That's one. Many other reports. One of the most important, two important things. One is essentially not controversial. Although some modern Islamists are trying to make it controversial. With this way, they will actually undermine history, undermine reporting, undermine rationality. They deny that there was stoning whatsoever. Even some of them deny there was stoning even in Bani Israel, which is just absurd. It's denied history. All history of Bani Israel, even the Roman records and so on, show that stoning was a punishment, the most common punishment in the Israelite religion, without any doubt. So this is nonsense. When Russian caught a Jews red-handed, punishing two Jews, a man and woman who committed adultery, and they were proven in a court of law, and then he saw them being paraded in the street of Medina, on the back of a donkey, reversed, sitting in reverse, and their faces blackened. That was a way to shame the people publicly. And then before that, they have been flogged, I think, 100 lashes. And they were clearly where they showed the signs of lashes, where they were painting. I say, what is that? Say, they committed adultery. Say, this is the punishment you find in the Torah about adultery. They say, yes. Say, no, that's not the punishment of the Torah. Bring the Torah, let us read it. So they brought it. And then one scholar was reading. And then he admonished them by the one who revealed it was a very strong admonishment that you tell the truth and don't hide. So they were reading. They called these parts of the Torah, the Old Testament, more precisely, is in Old Hebrew, and nobody in Medina mastered that. For Zayd ibn Thabit may have some Syriac, and Ubay may have not present at that moment, anyway. And then they were reading, and when they came, that scholar was reading and translating, came to the ayah or the verse or the line which describes Tony, he put his finger on it. And then one of the Jews said, since you admonish us so severely by the name of Allah, I couldn't hide it. Ask him to lift his hand. Or it's Abdullah ibn Salam, who was converted Mash'iliya. Let him lift his hand and read the ayah. Then he read the ayah, or the verse, or whatever, which he admonished stoning. It was clear that they have lied. They were covering up. And the Prophet asked him, why did you say, we have lost our kingdom, we became oppressed people under other kings, and then we have no power to administer stoning, which is again a lie. But actually they said, we hated the death penalty and we decided to agree on something more rational and less severe. And they said, flogging and blacking the face as well. And also order them. Now, that's their law. They were embarrassed. My guess is that the ayah of Rajm, which is very controversial, we will discuss it, but it's narrated from many, many places, including from Umar ibn Khattab, Ubay ibn Ka'b, Mas'ud, many others narrated it. So it's definitely was there. And even they narrate parts of its structure or formulation, but it's not relevant how it was structured or formulated. At that moment, I suggest that the ayah must have revealed of the ayah of Rajm to make it up to the Sharia of Muhammad, so he can, because he will not be, he was not allowed to apply the previous Sharia because the Sharia was abrogated. And also the issue of adultery was addressed earlier in Surah An-Nisa for men just insult and abuse, and for women holding them in the houses, imprisoning them until they die or until Allah brings some other injunction. So it's already abrogated. So it must come there, it must be revealed to make it the Sharia of Muhammad, at least temporarily, which is exactly what's happened. And based on that, not because it was interpreted. Some people say he stoned them or ordered them to be stoned according to the Torah. No, he embarrassed them to show them that they're not applying the Torah. Then he applied the Torah, which became his Sharia in this specific issue for just a few years or a few months maybe. And then later it was that abrogated. So the coming of the ayah was because it's no way that that he will be applied the Torah as such. He has to have his own revelation. And they got that injunction, it was done, and it was applied to two Muslims at least. Ma'iz, the famous story, and the woman from Juhaniya. Yeah, I think it's Juhaniya. Anyway, the woman, the famous story, the one which came and that she was pregnant, she was sent back, and then after she given birth, that they did not continue breastfeeding him until he becomes able to eat bread and so on and sustain himself. And then when she came again, say, we cannot stone here. And said, the child has need to have the attention. And when answered, say, I will be a foster father and mother for him. And then she was stoned. That's the last stoning. That when that one was revealed, this injunction, Umar ibn Khattab did not notice that this, and he said himself that there was an ayah, if I have the courage to change the site, anything in the book of Allah on my own without the agreement of all scholars and memorizers, I would write it in. He cannot, obviously. Definitely he cannot. So Umar is testifying for that. But what Umar did not notice in the pulpit when he was talking about Saqifah and all these issues and was beating around the bush before he comes to the hot issue of Abu Bakr election and so on, he addressed the issue of Rajm and so on. We have stoned. Some people say that we don't find the Rajm in the book of Allah. And he said it was in the book of Allah, but it was, and if I could have the power to write it, I would write it. But we are not allowed to write it. But we stoned and the Messenger of Allah stoned. Yes, true, he's telling the truth. They stoned the Messenger of Allah based on the ayah. When the ayah was abrogated, when the ayah is the wording of ayah is abrogated, then automatically also the ruling is abrogated. Someone said, what is the substitute? Substitute is in Surah An-Nur, 100 lashes for everyone. Adultery, married or non-married, is handled for everyone. That's it. That's a substitute. It's there. And a better substitute. It's a better substitute. Both a matter of mercy and also a matter of deterrence and everything. And a matter of it establishes the punishment, which is equal for married and unmarried, or previously married, not previously married, because the previous period's injunction was quite complex. Who is liable of stoning? Those who have intercourse in a legitimate marriage. Okay, but is that one the marriage is still continuing, or even a divorced one, and so on? All these issues were pending, but they were smashed by this better ayah of stoning. That Umar did not notice. But some Sahaba were arguing and discussing that after Umar. They say, we don't see the stoning in the Book of Allah. But Umar did not notice this point and insisted. And most scholars, like a four madhab, are still stuck to stoning following Umar, which is a mistake. It's definitely a mistake, because with the someone could say the Prophet stoned long after that. No, there's no stoning. The only stoning was Ma'iz, it was in the sixth year. And that woman committed the action in the sixth year, and then she was given the 2 years' time until getting the child up. And after that, there was no stoning at all. And the ayah of the ayah in Surah An-Nur, flogging, etc., that ayah was revealed much later in the ninth or tenth year. So the issue is settled. Nevertheless, it did escape. Umar did escape all scholars.
And those who claim there's an ijma, Sheikh, as you said, from the Khulafa Rashidin, they implemented it in different ways. They said, he did the lashing and then the stoning. So the point is, you can't claim an ijma. The point is that they were confused themselves because there was a difference. Confused.
Exactly. There's no ijma. First of all, ijma Rashidin is irrelevant. Who said the ijma Rashidin is a hujjah? The only ijma which could be a hujjah is ijma al Sahaba. But some Sahaba.
And they're definitely objected. Not that, because the Sahaba were disputing with him.
Yeah, they were disputing with Umar. And then Ali himself. His application was that he said, I'm flogging here with the Book of Allah and stoning here with the action of the Messenger of Allah. But we know the action was not before the other ayah come. So again, Ali is, despite his capability, is definitely, as they say in Allah, is the correct hadith, not he's the gate of the knowledge of the Messenger knowledge or something like that. Still, he's not infallible.
He's the fallible,
yeah.
But also, if he says, and we're lashing according to the Sunnah, what does it mean? The last action of the Prophet was
he said lashing according to the Book of Allah and the stoning according to the Sunnah of the Messenger of Allah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. But then we're saying it's abrogated. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's it. That's Sharah al-Hamdani. It's a famous story with Sunni and Shi'i. So even Ali did not get it right there. Very unfortunate. But it shows you sometimes that Allah gives signs that certain people, whatever rank they achieve, they are still fallible. That's one of the important things which we.
Were there any early scholars who pointed this out then, who had this opinion that it's abrogated because it's
after not that after the people as far as you know became complacent. I don't know, maybe some Khawarij or something like that, but again Khawarij are usually condemned as being outsider. But again, the point of the outsider is not taken. Now it doesn't help, because if these outsiders are still in the fold of Islam, then there's no ijma. So.
Brother Hassan had a question. It's probably related to this because we've covered it before, but maybe for new people, it's new information.
Later,
Brother Hassan, you wanted to ask a question? Bismillah.
Okay. Ahsanullah alaykum. So, in regards to, I understand that, like within the usul, that you know, that of the validity of the ijma' of the Sahaba. But a question that I have is, would it be from a fiqh standpoint and from an usuli standpoint, would it be considered valid for, let's say me or some guy named Ahmed who's talib al-ilm to take the view of a particular sahabi on a certain issue when it comes to issues like fiqh pertaining to this?
The view of what certain Sahabi, some people took it as evidence, because Ahmed al-Hanbal said, I prefer the view of a Sahabi over my own view. That's all that he said. There's no compelling evidence in Quran or Sunnah or necessity of reason making the view of a Sahabi a binding or a source of Sharia. Because we have even some Sahabi having certain views which are almost blunders in certain points and so on. So the evidence has come that it is cannot be evidence. it is false to make it a fundamental principle of deduction. But if someone chooses, does say, I prefer that over my own point of view, my deduction capability is low, I think the Sahabi is better. That could be postulated, but it is not, is binding only for him. It cannot be really that he can bring it an argument to anybody. Mm. So that's
okay.
On this particular issue, the intractable point in the ayah is, I think, is it in Noor as well? The adab al muhsanat, right? So for the punishment of a free woman.
Yeah, that's also they stuck with that.
Half of that of the slave, and or the punishment of the slave is half of that.
About, free woman. About married married slave woman. No, married slave woman. They have half the punishment of the muhsanat. If they get married, the slave woman, then they have the half of punishment. And then the scholar said that, but since stoning cannot be divided in half, we just divide the 100 lashes in half, which is manifest absurdity. I don't know how could this stick in someone's mind.
It's impossible. It's impossible unless
the instead of recognizing, there's some error, some mistake there. Still, maybe the muhsanat are not punished by stoning. They're punished only by the free muhsanat, obviously. They punished by slashes, 100, so it's 50. Then it makes sense. Then everything fits exactly. Allah put in the Quran many signs there, but some people are simply...
So...
You cannot blame them. Human mind is not perfect. It's not infallible. Yeah.
Okay. So then, from an Usuli from a fiqh standpoint, within the madhab of Dawood al-Isfahani, would it be then the proper thing that, since according to the Quran, the specified amount for, you know, for adultery, for punishment, for flogging, would be 100 times instead of 50 or so times
for the slaves, half of that, slave men and women.
Okay,
that solves everything. It keeps it on, no problem. And all the arguments which are brought by Omar, for example, or by Ali are faulty, based on a mistake.
And it's telling that they didn't agree amongst themselves, which shows us there's a problem there.
True. There's a problem there. And that's right. Ali was better, closer, and say, I flogged them with the book of Allah and stole them with this. But also this violated fundamental principle that, which general fundamental principle, although there may be exceptions in Sharia, but the general fundamental principle is that for certain crime act, there could be normally, not necessarily, only one punishment. And if you check all the Sharia, it will be only one punishment for the same and the same act. Not for possibly the repeated act. That may be something else. But for the same act. So for the same adultery of Sharaha al-Hamdaniya, it should be either this or this, cannot be both. This could have alerted Ali. But as I said, Allah gives sometimes sign in things which ingenious man like Ali, I know this many Shia will be a little bit not happy with this, but even an ingenious man of the ingenuity of Ali, who almost in every question of a dispute hit the right one, in this one he was not right. That's a sign from Allah to us that he's maybe not, that he's not infallible. The same with Mas'ud, he's a Quran, was the first one, and he's the one who did the humongous blunder, claiming that the Mu'awwidhatayn, qul a'udhu bi rabbi falaq, qul a'udhu bi nas, they are revelation, but they should not be fixed in the Muslim. How could this fix in his mind? It's beyond me. The only thing I say, this Allah made a sign to show that every bit of the Quran, every word has been written by a comprehensive agreement of hundreds of scholars, of written documents, and Ibn Mas'ud, all the Sahaba arguing against him, showing that he's wrong, is a sign of Allah that this, even that issue was discussed there and was not hidden. It enforced the protection of the Quran in a back way, by the negative side. That at least one famous first class of the Quran memorizer, the one who said about himself, I took 70 surah directly from the mouth of the Prophet, mostly Makki surah, obviously, could make such a blunder. So we have to get to the consensus and see what the written documents say. Yeah, so that's it. That's part of the protection of the zikr, to may bring things which may seem to be at face undermining the protection of the zikr, but actually they confirm it and enforce it if you analyze it rationally in the correct way. And that's the reason that Ibn Hazm was unable to say these stories must be fabricated. Could not quite possibly Ibn Hazm do doing that, because he could not see the other side of the coin. He saw only this side, which appears impossible. No. The other side, we said, in the other side, the coin say, Ibn Mas'ud is not infallible, beware. Question mark, exclamation. But the Quran is established with the written document, with the Dawah. Yeah, so that's the point. That's the point, I think, that in that story. But this is all that's metaphysical argumentation. In reality, that historically, we have to take that on board, because if we don't take the Dawah, we'll establish things. Then we cannot ascertain what history was all about. Then we are just stuck. Then all the back history is gone. And tawatur is as good as archaeological artifacts, all of these things. But although we won't discuss archaeological artifacts, it's casually, I think we mentioned it once, or we'll mention it in the future. They themselves is evidence that they exist. But the question that you have to verify that existence, that this archaeological or these bones are not fabricated. Where there have been, for example, someone was trying to enforce and support the theory of evolution, and he manufactured some skulls and things like that. And later on, an analysis showed that these skulls are not real skulls; they're manufactured. They were so genuinely and made yellow and ancient and so on. And he was exposed and banned academically. So even that could be. So you have to check it today, genuine. If you look, for example, to the artifact in Egypt, especially many artifacts attributed to Ramses II, this man was devouring all the artifacts of previous kings and scratching their names and put his name on the wall. But has been explored now by digging out. It showed that many of them are ancient before him, and he just usurped them, consumed them for his own purpose. So even the artifacts could be falsifying history in this sense. So you have to be critical in all these things. Otherwise, you will not get knowledge. And this criticality is important. Unfortunately, Ibn Hazm, despite of his criticality, the moment he comes to Isnad, and then he just lifts the white flag. This is very unfortunate. This is very unfortunate. That's what handicapped him from here going, progressing forward much more than he has progressed. Because he progressed.
What was Ibn Hazm's take on the on stoning then? Did he say both, or he said, was he on Umar's opinion?
No, he was on Umar's opinion. Yeah.
Okay. We can move on, Shaykh. No problem.
The general opinion is that the ayah of Al-Ashin is general for everyone, but the Sunnah has specified it down to the non-tayyib, to the virgins, the one who are not married yet or something like that. But clearly, the existence of an ayah and its abrogation and so on, and the historic order, which is irrefutably well established, makes absolutely no escape from the problem.
Real quick, Brother Iqbal, he wants to ask a question pertaining to this.
Yeah, we close that and then continue. What's the question pertaining to this? Yeah.
Jazakallah khairan, Ustaz Sheikh. So on this subject, again, going back to an Usuli point, for example, we have the statement or the hadith in Bukhari in which Rasulullah SAW, a couple of people came, one claiming that this person's son had committed zina with his wife, and he said, he gave me 100 camel.
Yeah.
But they came to Rasulullah and they asked him to judge between them by the book of Allah.
Mm-hmm.
And Rasulullah said to his son to be lashed 100 times and sent to exile, mm-hmm. while he told Unais to go and verify if the wife confirmed, then the rajm needs to be committed.
That's one of the rajm.
Right. This is the statement of Rasulullah, oral statement, which we usually generally take as revelation.
Yeah.
On the other hand, when the Sahaba reported that there is potentially an abrogation, they are not saying that Rasulullah said it's an abrogation. It's their own understanding. So from an Usuli point of view, how can we take the statement of a Sahaba to override or abrogate
a
statement of Rasulullah?
No.
And furthermore, on the same subject,
let me just answer this point. That action and the stoning is all before the ayah was abrogated. The ayah was still operative. And when the ayah was revealed of the stoning, it was mentioning a sheikh or sheikha, the mature man or mature woman, using the word sheikh, not using the adult. That's all the reports about how the ayah was formulated, which is gone, is forgotten. But it was considered only in Islam for those who are married and so on. And the Prophet said at that time, this is the revelation has relieved the woman from imprisonment If they are tayyib, they will be stoned. If they are non-tayyib, they will be lashed. That was before the abrogation. The ayah was still operating. Now, when the ayah, this is not a statement of Sahaba, the ayah was abrogated. When ayah is abrogated, then the hukm is abrogated. Unless we have a compelling evidence that the hukm is persisting. But the reality is that the hukm cannot be persisting because the ayah after that, which came in Surah An-Nur, which is the later revelation by many witnesses, not only the usual narration about the order of the Quran, by Aisha said, the Surah An-Nur is one of the last which has come in Quran. Whatever you have any dispute, take Surah An-Nur because this is the last one which abrogates previous ones. She said it in another context, not in the context of Rajul.
With the Aisha,
it's not a claim of Sahaba. It is just understanding what if the abrogation has happened.
Okay,
so,
but Sheikh, also,
who said that Nur was the last one of the last surahs? Sorry,
it's one of the last surahs. Aisha said that.
Aisha,
Surah
okay.
An-Nur is one of the last things revealed. Whatever halal haram, let's hold to it because this is the final one which abrogates whatever previously was. If some people are disputing about things, and she was that this is another issue not related to that.
And on the word, for example, the ayah that says the half of punishment, for example, the word muhsina, sometimes a word could mean two things. For example, the word touch in our Sharia,
yes,
means
yes.
Sexual intercourse as well, such as Maryam saying, I've not been touched. But, we know that touch doesn't mean physical. But, so the word muhsina in Quran, it could also mean free or married.
Okay,
it also means someone who protects herself. So we have to look at the context and take the meaning that's applicable.
The context itself is the uhsinna, when they become married. This has no other, the context does not allow anything else. The second muhsanat, meaning the free woman, married or unmarried.
And there's also the logical problem still exists, even if there's multiple meanings, but ultimately, logically, you have one category and another category, and they have half, one has half the punishment of the other. This is impossible with stoning.
Yeah.
Right? Which even the people who, obviously the majority who agree with it, they see the problem.
Anyway, I will say, inshallah, that I discuss all the branches because you have to do a bit of branching logic, like a logic table, and show it. It is no doubt that the only fundamental thing, all of this attribute is before the abrogation. The abrogation, by the way, the abrogation of the rajm, it's very late. We have a narration from Aisha that said that the ayah of Rajm was taken out of the Mus'haf because at that time, how they do changing the Mus'haf, they take the page and rewrite it with the abrogated ayah taken out. They write ayah by ayah, maybe in a sheet by sheet. So they had thousands of sheets, maybe.
Or something. Parchment, yeah.
That was taken out and was left under the bed of the Prophet so that there will be one day, because the parchment, the first class parchment, were expensive. So they will erase it in due time, or already erased, so they can be reused for another purpose, contracts, whatever it is. And that one has been eaten by a goat, by the witness of Aisha. It was just under the bed. But she mentioned that ayat al-Rajm was there, either erased or not erased, to be erased in due course, because very difficult to erase the writing on parchment, not very difficult, but they do it at the moment they're reusing it. Get water and scrub it and so on until it becomes faint, very faint, and then they write over it. So they did not want to waste that parchment, because these parchments were very expensive, especially the one from Yemen, the Khulani parchment. They're very thin and excellent. And it was under that. So that's again mentioned that. So it is very late. It must have been taken maybe in the 10th year, when the final review of the Quran, double review in the last Ramadan. In the last, you remember the Rasul said, whispered something to Fatima, and she wept, and then she whispered, she left. And then Aisha asked her after the Rasul passed away, say, because she did not tell her, I want to tell you a secret. After the Rasul said, the Rasul has passed away, please tell me. Tell her, he told me, I think my death time is coming close, because Jibreel this time, without telling anything, reviewed the Quran with me twice, because usually he reviewed the whole Quran with the revealed until that moment in Ramadan. This time he reviewed it twice. He did not say why, but it's clear this is twice review, meaning something is going to happen. I will not be available next year. Then that Fatima wept, and then Hassan told her, you don't need to weep, you are the first one from my family to join me in paradise. And she discussed it to Aisha after the word passed away. So most likely it was taken out in that final reading. Because I don't think it would be under the bed for more than 1 year, maybe a few months. Because Ramadan, the Shawwal, Sha'ban, the Qa'dah, the Hijjah, the final Hajj, yeah, 5 months. And the parchment is there ready for you to be reused in the proper occasion. It was never used. And some people may say, look, this is, they are neglecting the Quran. If you, the problem is some people are such donkeys, it's very difficult to argue with them. See, they are neglecting the Quran. This is an abrogated ayah put at the parchment is made for use. What may they get to the Quran? But these people are just jokers. But I'm just mentioning that as a joke at the side, because some people read things upside down. We have to read things in context, in a proper connection. Then you see, imagine you are at that time. At that time, parchments are expensive. They are being reused. And will be reused in progress. This one got, when they were busy with the final sickness to Prophet Sallam, some goat came inside and ate that parchment, which may have become dry and just become like a cardboard. And that goat enjoyed it. So that's it. And that's maybe one reason Allah made it to, so that Aisha will remember that incident and reported to us also. That's a ghaibi argument. But this is, he just said, like a sweetener. We should not argue this way, because we should not attribute to Allah's action in the universe, which we have no evidence why he did it this way. But we can guess. Maybe it is that. Okay? So I think consistently, it is not consistent except what I said now. We have an ayat al-rajm, my tawatur was there, and even some people memorized some of its wording with various variations. We have another story about abrogation. Also, there are many of them, not only this, just the one who's come in my mind. One of the some Sahaba would say, we were reviewing a surah of Quran because they were having that Quran reader living even in the masjid. The view of the Sufu were just devoted to read the Quran and rewrite it and re-edit it and so on. And they said, well, we were reviewing a certain surah for memory because he was not writer. Most of them were not writer. And then we there was one ayah. We remember there was an ayah there, but we could not. We tried to get it. We could not. Do you remember that there was something they said? No, I don't remember. So they came to us complaining. We remember there's between these two ayah, another ayah. But we could not remember it. What's happening? Rasulullah smiled and said, it has been lifted up. It has been abrogated. Allah made it to you to forget. So all of these together, obviously, this only makes sense if Muhammad is the messenger of Allah. If he's an imposter, then all this is obviously fixed and imposter. It has to be either this or this. It can't be otherwise. He's fixed the situation. He himself, someone say, he is himself an imposter. He did not remember. So he invented that story. Maybe that's, but he is an imposter. But we have the evidence that he's the messenger and irrefutable other evidence, but really back-breaking evidence. So we have to go to the first solution. That is the application of the ayah. Whatever ayah we abrogate or cause it to be forgotten, we will get another ayah or better, a better ayah or an equal one. Because Allah is capable of all things. And there may be other reasons for abrogation. Secondly, I said intermediate injunction, which nobody memorized because there was no dispute about them whatsoever. And they gone away and so on for some time. And then they were removed from the Quran because their presence in the Quran does not support its all comprehensive miracles and the number of ayahs and number of letters which will be exposed in the future when computers will be invented. For example, that's one possibility. You can speculate about many possibilities. Like, for example, the ayah about the rada, 10 rada'at to harimna, prohibits. And then Aisha said, then it was abrogated by 5 rada'at, and they were from the Quran, which we were reading. Some say, it's not in the Quran. It was abrogated. Some say, what is the replacement? The replacement is, وَأَمُّهَاتُكُمْ مِنَ الرَّضَاعَ just one rada'a, general rada'a. And the Prophet explained that rada'a means at least 3 full feedings. It is not majja and majjatan, not massa or massatan. So Abu Hanifa is right when he says 3 are enough for prohibition. But to be cautious on the side, Aisha used to do not only 5, because she used to instruct some of her relatives, her sister, for example, to feed someone, an adult. And this is an issue which we discussed in time. Leave it now, the adult, feeding adult with the intention to make prohibition. But Aisha insisted, and also Hafsa, 10 times. Although she had reported 5 times, because she wanted to be in the absolute maximum of safety. Because if you feed 10 times, you definitely have done the 5 and definitely have done the 3. Alhamdulillah, then you are the same. And she did not want anyone violating the sanctity of the house of the Prophet unless he's really a son or a nephew in Rada'a. a certain, if you want. So if you went with certitude, all she narrated as five is enough. And the hadith of the majja majjatan, one suckling, two suckling, or rada'a and rada'atan, one or two full feeding will not make prohibition. Meaning, anything else may make prohibition. So you can reason, okay, rada' prohibits, there's no number mentioned in the Quran has eased that math, removed the 10, removed the 5, it may be Abu Hanifa is the most right to the 3. But if you want to be more secure, especially if it's a rada' al-kabir, then we go with 5, or even with 10. But I myself, I think 3 is enough, because the hadith majja al-majjatan. Which ayah is better than that which has abrogated 10 and so on, is that ayah mentioning no number. Leave it for the Prophet to explain. So the minimum, that the Prophet explained, the minimum will be 3. 1 or 2 is not enough. It must be certain rada'ah. And you are not certain if it's done 1, 2, 3 times. Yes, this is the rada'ah. Either with the intention to make prohibition and create an ex of kin, which is a mahram, or really a baby which is being fed by a foster mother. By foster mother would be no problem. Foster mother would be definitely feeding hundreds of times. So it's futile, isn't it? It will be really having implication if you are doing rada'ah deliberately for creating prohibition. Then you have to count. That's it. So no need for 10 rada'at tuharrim or 5 rada'at tuharrim. Any rada'at tuharrim, any sensible rada'at. Leave it for the Prophet to explain, and he explained. 1 or 2 is not enough, but 3 definitely. And it is only really having any sensible application in the case of if you hire a foster mother, there's no way you're going to hire to just feed 1 or 2. And also this will include the culture. You are visiting some people and the baby there and the woman who can fed him that day casually one time. That's okay. It doesn't become her son in the but it has to be systematically at least 3 visits. Then it is really a close relation worthy of for the babies. But normally in all fostering, all feeding, the Arabs usually have the habit, the upper class, to hire ladies for caring for the kids, even send the kids with them in the countryside for health and development and so on. And clearly that foster mother will feed not only once, not only two, not 10, not 15. It should be, it may go in the hundreds definitely, because it will be several months and every day you have 3 or 4 feedings. So there's no need to discuss anything. I'm just making casual remarks about these ayahs, why there's no replacement of a better ayah for 10 rada'at prohibits 5 according to Aisha. Oh, there's not tawatur, but let's assume it was like that. Then yeah, this is ummahatukum min rada'ah. It prohibits because it's your mother in rada'ah. She is haram. The Quran says kajbir. Did not specify the number because there's no need to specify. The messenger was specified. And the previous 5 and 10 has been abrogated down to 3. So if Abu Hanifa at this point is right. For me, I think 3 is definitely. Combining this with the hadith, there's no doubt about that. So it has been set down to the hardcore. Okay? But this is, we'll discuss maybe in due course on the issue of Rada' al-Kabir. As I know, it's very controversial. Some people are discussing right and left center, and some people are making some expression which are just mockery of the either for saying human beings or show their simple mindedness and utter stupidity.
Okay, I have a quick question.
Yeah,
it's pertaining to a fiqh standpoint, but it's slightly off topic to the main point of discussion. So, like regarding the position of Muawiyah bin Abi Sufyan, is it allowed? From your view, is it allowed to like curse him?
This is a thought issue. Leave it. We have a publication about that. Hopefully, we'll translate it. I regard it's more important for the Arab world. But yeah, it is permissible. Yes, because he cursed Ali with the pulpit with no justification, and he's definitely established that by tawatur in this research. If you are capable of Arabic, you have seen that research, or should I go with it later
in the
I'll put it inshallah.
Inshallah. Oh yeah, by the way, one last thing. Sometime after the dars is done, I would like to speak to you personally about something.
Okay.
Inshallah. Okay.
Okay. So this is the ayah of Nas. We stop there and give examples. I think it's worthy because it's very important, having to an important usuli point, but it has also important philosophical point. Because the Jews, again, to show that it's fit in the contents, because the Jews are good. All of that is fine. Muhammad, that he's maybe right about Harut and Marut and all of these things. Maybe he's right, but it's impossible for Allah to abrogate. They imagine Allah like the Persian kings. It was a time of in the early Persian kingdom. A king cannot abrogate his own command. That make some kind of state security. And even the next king has to find some justification or find some kind of trick. So they thought, how can be then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala going back and changing his command and abrogating his ruling? So since Muhammad is abrogating definitely things from the Torah, no doubt, any doubt, he's abrogating that. He cannot be a prophet. But this is really undermining Allah's sovereignty, meaning Allah is bound by his previous injunctions in such a sense that he cannot change them or break them, which is not dictated by necessity of divinity or holiness. Injunctions concerning the Sharia, revealed Sharia, things like that, or revealed ayahs or reformulating of ayahs, these are not necessarily related to his divinity. Actually, the liberty to do that is related to his absolute and supremacy and holiness and divinity. But he has that. He is the sovereign. He can't abrogate them. What will never come in abrogation is that he obliged himself from eternity not to lie. Although lie is accessible to power. Lying is possible. It's a contingency. It's possible. It's accessible to power. But he removed that the possibility of lying eternally from power. So you could say he will never lie and will never go back on that, because going back on that will undermine his true essence of being the truth and the divine being, for example. The same with plotting. He will plot against the one who start plotting as a retaliation, but never start plotting. Never, ever. But it is from the same category like lying and things like that. Things like that. But the moment he has decided that, it will not, because it will, going back will undermine that he's the divine sovereign, the haqq al-mubin. But in human injunction, he come an injunction and he can abrogate it, because the initial injunction was not made on him by obligatory by any supreme being or another rational necessity. It is just a choice which contingent. He can injunction that. For example, in previous Sharia, certain foods and so on were prohibited, made permissible for us, and certain food and drinks were permissible and were made haram for us. That's completely within his sovereignty. Meaning that, for example, his permission for alcohol, for example, when he started, which is well established for the Christian, which is well established, the fact that the evil of alcohol is outweigh the benefit of alcohol is not obliging to Allah to prohibit him. He can prohibit and can leave it. He's not obliged. It's no obligation on him to take care of us in the sense that anything bad he prohibits, he may do it as a grace. And this is the first feature of the final messenger, that everything good and nutritious will be permitted, and every bad and evil and infectious will be prohibited. But this is a speciality of the final prophet, an extra grace. There is no obligation. For example, Bani Israel asked, originally they have been given the injunction. Musa said to them clearly, remember the grace of Allah on you, who sent you prophets from among yourself and made you kings. You are now your own masters. You are now govern yourself with shura. You are now choose your kings and your rulers. There's no king above you. And then several centuries later, they come to Samuel alayhi salam asking you appoint a king. And there's an argument in the Old Testament. If you go and read it, the book of Samuel, number one, Samuel was very upset and felt that it is attacking his leadership. The Prophet said, no, they're not attacking leadership. They're attacking me. They don't want me to be their king. Like they deserted me and worshipped the golden calf and mentioned all their transgression. And then ultimately say, warn them that the king will be this, the king will be this. And then he warned them and they insisted. So he allowed them to go to hell. He's a sovereign. He's not obliged to protect them. He can protect if he wishes. And that's what caused their decline. Yes, there was the time of Talut. We'll come to that inshallah. We'll mention that a bit in the time down the road. The time of Dawood, then Sulaiman. Then it went downhill from that. Downhill, and they were attacked and by Assyria, destroying the northern kingdom, Israel, and then they were attacked later, a couple of centuries later, roughly something like that, by Nebuchadnezzar, destroying the lower kingdom. And they never got any real kingdom on it, except now. And even that kingdom is going to be demolished soon or so. Because of that, that's a stupid choice. They don't want to continue with Shura. and with management of prophets and judges, they prefer to have an, a king, an oppressive king. Although the warning, if you read in Samuel, is shocking. The king will do that. The king will use your girls to be working for as to comb his daughters and groom them and so on, like house slaves and all of this. They ignore. They prefer to have a king, because this way they be like another nation and they can invade and fight other nations. Such a stupidity. If you are so stupid, Allah is not obliged to help you more than that. And they give them a warning. And in the future, whatever oppression from the king, from your kings will happen, I'm not going to accept your supplication. Forget about that. It is over. And that's in Samud. Go and read Samud. Very instructive. So Allah is not obliged. So they claim that Allah is obliged with previous injunction. No. For his own obligation of not to lie or not to plot against anyone except the one who started the plotting, evil plot, that Allah will counter with plot, makru, makru, makanawa. Except that's for eternity. But this is not, this is for him, not for his creation. So that's also a philosophical and an important point of rationalization, of higher importance, I would say. That Allah is not obliged in Sharia to make the Sharia so mild or so gentle or less gentle. But it will not go to the extreme in opposition to Al-Ash'ari that he made an injunction which is impossible to fulfill. Because Al-Ash'ari said Allah has the right even to make an injunction which is impossible to fulfill. Taklif bima la yustata. This is definitely wrong. Because this would be unjust. And Allah has obliged himself for all eternity not to be unjust. Because what's the meaning of injustice? The essential meaning that I punish you for something which you not do. This disconnecting the relation between cause and effect, breaking the principle of rationality, this can come only from an irrational and a God which is not a haq, it's impossible. Or make an injunction that you do something while I don't give you the power to do the capability. That's also impossible because it breaks the principle of rationality and the divinity. The divinity is the ultimate rationality, the ultimate haq. Allah huwa al-haq al-mubin. That's not so. The Ash'ari made a major blunder. That statement itself is a statement of kufr, unfortunately. But you find it in the book of Al-Aqaid, and many people say, still subscribe to it and swallow it down. For example. But let's go back to the lower level, to the dunya and the creation as well. Allah has the absolute sovereignty of abrogating this one. And they have it in their own books. They are lying. What Samuel did is really abrogating the ruling that you govern yourself by Shura. And listen to your prophets and your judges, who are mostly prophets at the time of judges. They decided, no, we don't want that. We want a king, so we can fight efficiently, because a king will streamline the armies and so on. So they put streamlining the armies ahead of any other consideration. A more fundamental consideration, that you become really respectable human beings who govern themselves. That's their choice. Read Samuel. That was abrogated. With a warning from Allah, whatever the repercussion would be great. So they have obligation. So they're lying and say Allah cannot abrogate. They're just a blatant lie. And attempt to escape from accepting Isa when he came, accepting Muhammad came. There's no escape. You have no rational argument and no compelling reason to get away from your obligation to accept any new prophet when he comes, even if he abrogates all of the previous one. The moment he brings the irrefutable evidence, there's no doubt. Alas, obligation, the previous one is gone, this one is the one to follow. That's it. No doubt. And this is even the message when Adam and wife were kicked from paradise. If you receive guidance from me, then if you follow my guidance, you will not be misguided. And whoever turn away from my guidance will have a miserable life and will be blind, resurrected blind. And the guidance, when the guidance comes, it may change the previous guidance, may expand it, may improve on it. Because the guidance will depend upon the situation of the people, and the injection will be up to their level. As history has shown, the level of sophistication of our life and so on advances, and the injection may be needed until we have the final one. Anyway, let's continue maybe with the scene. Is there a continuation about that? Don't you know that Allah is capable of all things, have the omni power, one power? then continue also challenging telling about Allah's control of the universe. Rash, read that translation.
Dost thou not know that God is the dominion over the heavens and the earth, and that besides God you have none to protect you or bring you succor?
Exactly. So that's it. So that is the omnipotent. He has the dominion and the control, the kingdom of heavens and earth. And you cannot find beside Allah anyone who can protect you or be ally of you or bring you succor or victory. So that's a fundamental point. And this is just a continuation of the issue that Allah is capable of all things. But people's mind, especially if they're coming from a pagan past, they have a confused idea about the divinity, what the divine can do. And they think somehow the universe is somehow co-eternal with Allah, and Allah cannot do very much in the universe or something like that. And is that the limitation? No, that's not. He has the complete dominion of heavens and earth and complete power over them. And there's nothing which can be shield you from Allah's wrath or Allah's support or prevent Allah's support coming to you. And then, obviously, some issues have arisen. The next ayah, I think we should, yeah, we can do it. One ayah is standalone, but relate to some issues of people asking certain questions. But let us read the ayah first.
Would you perchance ask of the apostle who has been sent unto you what was asked aforetime of Moses? But whoever chooses to deny the evidence of the truth instead of believing in it, has already strayed far from the right path.
Yeah.
On the translation, or do you want to ask your messenger as Moses was asked previously? Whoever exchanges faith or unbelief has strayed from the straight path.
Yeah. So that's if you know that the messenger have already the evidences, that you don't have the liberty now to ask further evidence or ask further miracles. They are not allowed to that. That's what the one Israel were doing. And every time he bring an injunction or set commitments, they come and ask for further challenges. Do this, do that. No, don't do that. And then ultimately, when they were made the injunction to enter in these cities and take possession of them, they said, okay, these people are very tough fighters. We're not able to confront them. Go, since you and your Lord have managed the affairs until now very nicely, you got us out of Egypt, you crossed the Red Sea. There's so many things. It's easy for you and your Lord to go and fight. We'll sit here, wait for the result. So that's what they wanted. The Musa and the Lord were doing everything for them. But that's not the purpose of messengerhood. In the case of Musa, there was a singular historic situation. There was no way to get Bani Israel from Egypt, from the kingdom, which was in the peak of his power. By the way, the time of Musa's most probably in contradiction to the most common point of view or the most common claims that is Ramses II, Meren Ptah's son, is most likely not correct. The most correct is it would be really the peak, the ultimate peak of their power and the kingdom. That's in the time of Thutmis II and before him, Queen Hatshepsut, which became a pharaoh. And is the one which most likely Musa ran away in her time to Midian. And when he received the news, according to the Old Testament, not the Quran, I just mentioned that the Pharaoh died. Pharaoh is this, because she declared herself to be a Pharaoh, and she even had a gold beard. That the society was so male dominated that even the queen needed to appear as a man. So they have a beard out of gold. So that's a man queen.
How does this marry up with the ayahs when Moses found in the cradle and such in the river? Don't kill him and we can take
that's
him.
That's before. That's the one the Old Testament say when he had Pharaoh died, he went back. It was not the Pharaoh who brought him up. There was various pharaohs and Hatshepsut came.
Oh, okay. And, so what you're saying is
I'm just
there meaning, was a couple before.
Yeah.
But then how do we link up with this idea of Asiya, the wife of the male pharaoh, being the one who raised him as well?
Yeah, maybe she was still there because this one inherited the kingdom.
Okay. So she wasn't his wife. Okay.
No, not all right.
I start to understand. So you
but,
can.
But this is we have to synchronize the various stories and analyze them. And
it sounds like it's going to take some work to explain that one.
Oh, that's you need to go to the Old Testament, try to synchronize with it. But the history of Egypt at that time is very different because the Pharaoh after that, when he came to Egypt, there was. But we don't know who was there. Is it Thutmose II? But Thutmose is supposed to be having ruled for 40 years. My theory, just a secondary point, and then maybe we'll stop today, is that a pharaoh, the pharaoh also really drowned, And then the priest and so on covered that up and appointed his brother, and then he substituted for him, became like a co-regent. And in history records, they mention, they don't mention the one who died, or the one after him was married with him in history. And don't think this is an oddity in historic record of ancient nations. For example, King Ramses himself has a steel as a missile, in which the list of kings of Egypt going through all of them one by one, allegedly. But it doesn't fit with the list, the famous list made by the priest who was also writing in Greek, and his literature is well known. And what is missing there? Before Ramses, like one or two generations, there was King Akhenaton, the monotheist. He crossed him out of history completely. There was no Akhenaton in the list. So falsifying history and skipping kings and fixing history is an old disease, not only modern times. That's very common, especially Ramses was indulged considerably in this amount. So we cannot exclude that to cover the scandal that the one who drowned has been struck out of history, and that Thutmose II had been shifted back after the death of Hatshepsut. But this is need really a similar study just for it. It will be fun to enjoy, to see how to expose how these ancient priests, because mostly it's done by priests and by states, by people, as statesmen and ministers, they will fix history accordingly, to cover up for scandals, to claim victories which are not there. Like, for example, when I think it's, was it Sargon? I don't know which one, Ashurian king, he sees the Bayt al-Maqdis, and then he continued towards Egypt in a battle. I don't know if he was in Egypt very successful or achieved some part of victory, then he came back. During that time, he sent a letter to the king of the Jews, was at that time one of the rare, very rare righteous kings. That's in the southern kingdom, in Judea, in Yehudia. And told him, I challenge your God to save you and finish the siege. Now the Old Testament says the king of the Jews was a righteous man, was a singular righteous, because all of them after Suleiman were all tyrants, except three or four. That's one of the good ones. Went with a letter the letter sent by the Ashurian king, put it on the Ark of Covenant in the temple of Suleiman, was still there, not diminished, and ask Allah, see, this man is challenging you, I am unable to respond to the challenge. And then the Old Testament says, Allah Alam, it's true or not true. I feel strongly that's true. Say at that night, the Lord sent an angel who came like a meteorite, and went down to the camp, which was sieging the city, of several hundred thousand soldiers, a very tough siege, a catastrophic situation, and killed all soldiers, up to the last man. When the king of Ashur came back from his campaign on the south toward Egypt, came back, found everyone dead, most likely he buried them, and broke camp and went back home. Now what here or there say, I see king so-and-so-on of Yehudia, like a bird in a cage, full stop. That's all that he mentioned. Doesn't mention the calamity at his army. So these old kings and old kingdoms, all records, don't trust them 100%. You have to read between the lines also there. I will trust the Old Testament report more than the Ashurian king. Anyway, that is just a footnote of history. Go back to what we are saying. So for that situation, the supreme power of the world, the first power on earth at the time, with the peak of their kingdom, that's really the peak. That time is the peak of the Pharaoh kingdom, the utmost power of the Pharaoh kingdom. It was not possible without all these miracles to get them out. There's no way. But after that, they have to stand in their own feet, to take their destiny in their own hand. They are now kings of their own self. They have to take their destiny, but they decide not. So they're asking Moses all kinds of challenges, of complaining about it. And they're not asking in a polite way. When, for example, they were thirsty, after passing and so on, and going to Mount Sinai, they passed in a place called Murra. By the way, this place is actually south of Tabuk, it's not in Sinai, but that's another issue to discuss one day, inshallah. And the water was bitter. What they wanted water, which is a legitimate request. Instead of asking us, the Lord, please, and so on, say, Musa, did you get us here to die on thirst? What is the sense of us, of you saving us from Pharaoh to kill us here? You are one, you got here us to kill us. You are not getting here to save us. That's the way they were asking. So the rebukation here, don't ask your messenger not only things which they asked, but also the way they were asking. The way is disrespectful, impolite, not appreciating. And then when they were given manna and at Salwa, they said, oh, this is a boring food. We have been better in Egypt. We want onion, we want this, we want this. So Moshe was fed up, said, okay, you want onions? Go again. Go in a city and try to conquer a city and start planting onions. He was just up to his nose. And you remember Hadith al-Mi'raj, he said, I struggled with Bani Israel up to my nose. I struggled up. It's impossible to preach anything with these people. So don't ask your messenger this way. First of all, ask things which are not appropriate. And secondly, ask in an even worse, in an appropriate way. Imagine you are a messenger, you have saved him and crossed the sea and all this, and say, Musa, you did get us here to kill us. Evidently, you don't want to save us. You are exterminating us. We are dying of thirst here. So I'm saying, please ask the Lord to get some water or something. No, that's not the way they were asking. So don't ask your messenger the way in this impolite and really challenging and despicable way. And if you do that, especially the way, not the content of asking. You may ask something miraculous. Yeah, maybe. I tell you, Allah does not make miracles. You have to work for it. And that's okay. But you ask it in a polite way, in a respectful way, and we acknowledging him as a messenger, as in the case of Musa, as the savior of the nation, even the father of the nation, because the nation was about to be extinct. A few decades and centuries would have, they have been gone, finished. And were it not for promise made Allah to Abraham and Yaqub, they would have left it to disappear. Why? They are no better than any other nation. If you do this way, with this impolite and insulted way, you are committing kufr. And whoever is exchanged kufr, iman, he definitely has exchanged, has gone astray far away. I think maybe we should stop here, yeah? Because the next one seems to be a set of new injunction. And then maybe the one ayah, the next ayah shows that it is what they all doing is really because of envy and the bad intention, not where they never never intended any good to the Muslims or even the Arabs of Medina when they were pagans. They were never. So the ayah says, what the kathirun, yeah?
So we recite it?
Yeah.
Okay. Out of their selfish envy, many among the followers of earlier revelation would like to bring you back to denying the truth after you have attained faith. Even after the truth has become clear unto them, nonetheless, forgive and forbear until God shall make manifest his will. Behold, God has the power to will anything. The easier translation, even after truth became clear to them, many of the people of the book, out of their selfish envy, wish they could turn you back to unbelief after you became believers. So forgive and forbear until God makes his will clear. God has power over all things.
Yeah, I think the meaning is clear. This is don't be fooled by these people and claim of being allies and friends and so on, and wishing the best for you, because they will not come to you. I wish the evil for you. No, wish the best for you. We want to save you from this imposter. We want you to go back to the situation with the beast and so on. You have no problem with the Quraysh. If caravans are passing, you have your cut there and your business. This man has brought you in hostility with Quraysh and problems, and the caravans are missing Medina. Your business is going down. We are sincere advisor. You are not winning. You are just losing, accepting this man. But this is all because, although they have recognized deep in their heart, the majority of them recognized this is the truth. We have a story there also, a significant story, that Huyay ibn Akhtab, the father of Safiya, Rabbanallah wasalamu alayha, the wife of the Prophet, before him and long ago, she reported himself. He said, I used to be the darling of my father. When he comes home, the first one to embrace and kisses me. And then one day, he went with my uncle, she meant his name, the brother of Safiya ibn Akhtab. And they were going to the, obviously from their statement, she understood they were going to the Prophet to check his. And then she said, when they came back, I rushed to my father to have the kiss and embracement, because she was a small girl at the time. And that he did not bother, did not embrace her, was completely out of his mind, defocused. And she was surprised, and she was what were they talking. And then her uncle asked her father, is he the one? Said, yeah, he's the one. So what should you do? Say, I will stick to his hostility until I die. I'm not going to accept him. So he knew he's the one. Is that the promised prophet? Because they were expecting a prophet because of certain reading, and I think good reading of the prophecies of Daniel, that is the time of a prophet to come, a significant change in history to come. And they were hoping that, and there were some stories that they were expecting a prophet. Even Salman al-Farsi came to Arabia and tried to find the final prophet. All of these things, if you talk to all of them, they show clearly that there was a expectation of a major break in history. So the father of Sophia said, my intention is to be his enemy until ever, until death. So that's it. So we have all these evidences together. And the Quran is testified for that. We don't think that we have so many bits and stories which testify for that also in individual cases. Allah said, that's it. All of this selfish envy because of their hatred. There's no good intention there, but forgive and turn away until Allah brings his command. What the command of Allah was promised there, nobody knows at the time, but it was they could not hide their hatred and hostility until they were expelled one by one by one by one and exterminated. The case of Bani Qurayza, who allied with Quraysh and broke their treaties and so on. But original execution was peaceful, there was no confrontation, but Allah will be because they never committed their covenant, they were never honest to the agreements, and the result was that Bani Qaynuqa was expelled first once, then Bani Nadir next one. And the third one, there was no way to expel them because there's final judgment made by their ally in Jahiliyyah, whom they appointed themselves as a judge. It was the extermination, which is taking all children and women, prisoners of war, and finishing off the fighting stock, except those who embraced Islam or was underage. That's it. So that's the resolution which happened. But at that time, nobody knew what would happen. Allah is capable of all things. And then we stop here, I think. That's enough, because the next would be another context about their claims, about they are the control, they have the paradises there for them, etc. We'll get that shall next time. Okay, so that's it. Okay, I have split a question part from the middle and put it together properly. Yeah, of course.
I have a question. Do I speak to you on here or speak to you in private?
And I can speak this here, and Ayaz will cut it, the recording, or do you want it to be private?
It's more private, but Brother Muhammad also knows about it, so it's just something I it was to speak to you personally.
Should the rest of us jump off and then
better thing to do is why don't we all leave the room? You two can then, stay, have your conversation, and then
dial by Telegram or Skype. Show him how to do, and then we'll be coming.
Yeah, send him Sheikh Skype. Telegram ID, and probably best that's where you act.
Ayaz has all these things. Yeah.
Okay, inshallah. Let's close the room, and then you guys speak on Telegram, inshallah, as needed.
Inshallah. I guess you can also be in the conversation as well, then Muhammad.
If you need, I need to do a few things. You do have your conversation, inshallah. Unless you need
me. No problem, inshallah.
Yeah. Okay.
Just a second, sorry. I'm gonna share the contact now, and then everyone can leave the group.
But let's close this session. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's gonna share the details for the brother. Then he's gonna close it. Sense
okay.
No, the Zoom session, not the Skype.
Yep. Hassan, I've sent you the Sheikh's contact. Just look at it in your chat, and then I can close this call. Yeah. Hello.
All right. Yeah. Sorry, I was just doing something. Okay.
You got it. Yeah.
Let me check and see.
It's in your chat box.
In the chat box. Hold on. Let me check and see.
If I leave this call, then the call's closed. So if you just do that, then talk to Sheikh directly off Telegram.
Yeah, just send to me in Messenger, inshallah. I can't check the chat.
I don't know. I don't have your Messenger. Okay, no problem. I'll figure it out.
No. Oh, yeah. Muhammad has it. So.
Okay, great. No problem. Mm-hmm. Assalamu alaikum.
All right. Assalamu alaikum.